so freedom and resistance. So there's one important discrepancy, I think, between the conceptions of freedom that of Foucault and Bakunin that I'd like to make. Bakunin, freedom is produced, whereas for Foucault, freedom is the a priori of power relations, or its individual factor. Conceiving of freedom as an a priori of power relations means that there is some radical political potential in recognizing spaces of freedom that we thought were foreclosed or gone unrecognized, for instance, as in the everyday resistance discussion that I mentioned earlier. Conceiving of freedom as a practice has a similar effect, but with close analysis of such practices is largely limited to the individual level. In his later work, sort of retreating to sort of care of the self can be really limited for us in the room that are looking for a more political project, a larger political project, perhaps. Bakunin's contention, on the other hand, that freedom can be produced, I think has a more radical potential. Creating the conditions for freedom-producing relations and challenging social tyranny becomes more explicit, concrete, and importantly, a collective project. For Bakunin, it's not about finding the sliver of freedom in which we can barely wiggle, but to rise up and liberate spaces of freedom. So looking at the relationship between the work of Bakunin and Foucault, it's hopefully clear that our task isn't necessarily to overcome the flaws of classical anarchism, as May and Newman suggest. That is, in part, what the post in Newman's formulation means, the post that has drawn so much criticism. So rather, on the one hand, I think Foucault's work can sort of help us reconcile the concepts of social subjectivity, social tyranny, and the spirit of revolt. Concepts and their interrelation, which I don't think receive enough attention in Bakunin's own writing, nor in that of his interpreters. So on the other hand, I think Bakunin provides a much more tangible political project than Foucault, though Foucault too calls for resistance. He says that the analysis, elaboration, and bringing into question of power relations and the agonism between power relations and the intransitivity of freedom is an increasingly political task, even the political task that is inherent in all social existence. So Foucault is by no means apolitical, as some people want to claim, but elaborates practices of freedom, practices of resistance to domination, and provides powerful theoretical tools to challenge domination. As researchers, it's our task to uncover these sites of domination and resistance. And as we continue to analyze resistance to the state and capital, we also examine those everyday forms of tyranny and resistance that persist within our own communities and our own movements. What are the forms of domination within the resistance, and how do we overcome them? For Foucault, this remains largely an academic pursuit, first and foremost, a practice of criticism. Indeed, we must do more than merely analyze or bring into question these relations of domination. As Foucault suggests, domination must be challenged outright. So against what must this revolt be directed? Institutions, yes, the state, TSA, and that assumes the criminality of every traveler, certainly yes, financial institutions, authoritarian educational institutions and practices, and so on. Against the social tyranny that persists in social relations of sexism, white supremacy, heterosexism, ableism, down the line. But Bakunin offers one further side and target of revolt. With the social production of the subject, Bakunin argues, society, so to speak, individualizes itself in every individual. Under conditions of social tyranny, this can make revolt challenging, but Bakunin contends, quote, it follows from this that to revolt against this influence that society naturally exercises over him, he must, at least to some extent, revolt against himself. So how exactly does one do this and not fall into this sort of individualizing trap of Foucault's care of the self, practices, technologies of the self? Or the types of rebellion that were criticized in our opening session yesterday. Right? How can we have forms of rebellion that are just sort of narcissistic self-liberation? So three quick examples in conclusion. First, as I've argued elsewhere, I've always wanted to put them. One way to connect ourselves to these levels, connect these levels of revolt, the sort of individual revolt and the larger political project, is participation in what I call democratic insurrection. So that is an open deliberation, consensus, decision-making, and direct action. And second, continuing to develop organizational structures and decision-making processes that challenge the social tyrannies in which we may be implicit, creating processes that are open and participatory but encourage critical reflection on the process itself. Some of my work with the Climate Justice, Direct Action Climate Justice Group in the San Francisco Bay Area has been part of our continual struggle. For me, as sort of a structure nerd, I think it's really interesting. For a lot of people, I think it's really annoying. We're constantly asking, how do we create an organizational structure that takes leadership from frontline communities? How do we create decision-making processes that prioritize the struggles of these communities? And I just wanted to point to sort of our most recent manifestations, kind of the flow chart on how the hell we're going to make decisions so people know when they're getting involved. So just to kind of run through this, give us something a little bit more practical to grab. We really, really, really quick. All right, so basically the idea is that constantly checking in with community-based organizations, taking leadership on action campaigns and proposals. Always the first place going to when seeing if we have consensus. Do we have consensus from community-based organizations? Are they on board? Is this something that's going to further their struggles before looking to the rest of the group, which is working largely to support? So I won't go into that. And then finally, the central revolt, I think, of stepping back in meetings and discussions, refusing to accept the position of privilege that many of us occupy, the unconscious social tyranny that we perpetuate. Through such revolts, we can produce freedom. As subjects, we can continue to become, to challenge the institutional, social, and internal tyrannies, and in turn foster the conditions for agonism, conflict, and the permanent provocation necessary for a truly democratic, or if you prefer, anarchist society. With that, I, privileged white male, will step back.
Okay, so time for questions. Anymore, whether what the president says is true, all that matters is that he says it, because the United States is powerful enough to create its own reality. So whether these notions of playfulness and openness are really easily recuperated by people in power, and I can see the nice anarchist thing about this kind of openness and playfulness thing.
I think some of the criticisms that I was kind of pointing to of Foucault is the sort of limitation, I think, about individualism, that I think the practices of freedom. I mean, Foucault doesn't want to give us a political project. He's really explicit about that. Everything is dangerous, kind of fears that if he provides us with some sort of plan, we're going to fall into some trap. But sort of point the way to the possibilities for other forms of resistance. And I think that largely he does discuss it on the sort of individual level, which I think the playfulness and the openness can easily be co-opted. So I think that's sort of what the anarchist Kuhninist reading can help us with, is how can we really turn this into a real project, a positive political project of resistance. And I think really creating spaces of freedom and equality, something I didn't really talk about in Kuhn's work, but essential for this idea of freedom, to socially produce freedom is creating conditions of equality that make freedom possible. And I think that's something that can't really be co-opted. I think that, really thinking about equality and spaces that we can create alternatives isn't something that works so easily in this system.
Can I say something in response to your question, Alan? I suppose you could say that the whole discourse of novelty and creation, in a way, has been co-opted by, for instance,
advertising companies in and it's like behind the kind of hopelessness about a what creativity or a novelty. What use is there in talking about these things anymore if there's something to look for? I think to give up on recuperating that would be worse than to keep trying to think of new ways to challenge that preoccupation. That's all I can really say anymore. Maybe afterwards we can talk about it if you want. That's all I can really say.
Well, I think that the attempt to argue that individualism is not even a theoretical possibility because of this certain concept of essentially individuals being created by society, I think that's an incorrect model. And therefore, any discussion I would have between individual and society would not be in that framework. So, I mean, I find that it is possible to maintain a individualist politics. I mean, the basic thing I have a problem with the framework that tries to deny even the possibility of an individual is that you're talking about the causes of events. Essentially, it just tries to always find a cause that comes back to society, but society itself is never questioned to the same fundamental degree. So it's kind of like arguing from the conclusion. And I think that a more correct point of view would have it that causes reside in many different places, some within an individual, some within a group. Those causes may go back and forth between each other. In other words, one could formulate a whole different framework in which the individual would have an equally valid existence, and therefore it would be possible for me to say I prefer an individualistic politics, and that to me this is not to say that I'm negative towards others, it's more that there's more, it's a relationship between individuals rather than it just being a thing of society.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, a great criticism. Maybe I wasn't really that clear. I don't disagree with you. I think Bruno Latour has done some interesting work on this. He has a book called Reassembling the Social, which is problematic in a lot of ways, I think. But I think it's an actor network theory. We can't really talk about society as a thing, but it's really just a network of connected individuals. He wants to talk beyond individuals and humans, connections between me and my computer water bottle, and between my water bottle and the computer. That's where I get.
I actually think that society does exist as well as individuals. I mean, I tend to paraphrase Margaret Thatcher and say society does exist, but it shouldn't.
Well, I'm not going to side with Margaret Thatcher here, but I think a couple of things. I think for Kunin, and I think for Foucault, that the spirit of revolt and this sort of, in the last instance, still revolt, illustrates that the individual actor still has agency. And I think that's sort of what I wanted to come across a little bit more was that it's not this total determination, right? For Foucault, it's not you have no choice of what you can do and how you can act, but there is still the space of freedom, the space of agency. It's not a fully determined subject. But yeah, there still is choice. There still is, even in the most repressive situation, some wiggle room on how you can act. and how, and that that can be a form of resistance and can be a form of subversion. That's what you're talking about. I agree. I think it's not that we're totally determined and let's just wallow in that, but that, you know, finding those places of choice and resistance. But those don't necessarily come from some pure personal place.
So I have a question for so are you advocating philosophical revolution and optimism? Can this revolution can be purely philosophical if that is the case? And furthermore, conceptual gap between philosophical concepts. How do you think we can close that gap?
Okay. Well, I guess the simple answer would be through education and or things like anarchist free universities, opportunities for people who wouldn't normally end up in university. Listen to people such as ourselves who have been in school for a long time and have thought these things very carefully, not only anarchist politics, but also structuralist philosophy as well. I wouldn't say that, well, you started your question by saying something about should evolution be just philosophical. What do you actually mean? By philosophical and political, I guess there's a. I mean, if we shut out philosophy, we're just going to end up repeating the same entire thing. I mean, the world's changed a lot since the 19th century. A lot of ideas from the classic anarchists aren't adequate anymore. Some of them maybe can be updated a bit, but I think. Post-structuralism in particular, there's a lot of interesting possibilities for transforming those things. That's all I'll say. And I'll leave it to you.
I pretty much agree with that. No, I don't think solely philosophical revolution at all. I do think, we need to continue to critique the concepts that we have, that we understand the world through. And I think but it's not just about understanding. Yes, those can be resistant thing. Consciousness, for example, lack of effect. But I think really it's looking hopefully, at the end of the presentation, concepts, these ideas, these philosophical, political philosophy ideas can offer us for actual politics. And where I'm concerned with. Which is difficult as an academic activist or activist academic, really finding out how the concept I can actually function in the world. And negotiating that within a university. But working with organizations, I've been trying to find ways that these ideas can help us as an organization, as a group, as parts of affinity groups, understand in a more complex, nuanced way some of the relationships that happen, some of the problems that we're having to have, and this actually provides a tool for understanding and then create practical solutions. So I haven't really figured out how to do that. This is a great place to be discussing it. I think that's the hope. I definitely don't want to be just scratching my ears and on the fireplace. Or, looking at a ball of wax.
I hope I don't sound like this. I think academics stand just as much to gain from this.
I'll start with a brief comment. I agree with you 100% that to a certain extent, no matter what one thinks about the particulars of Bakunin's ideas or Kropotkin's or Proudhon's, I think it's fairly obvious that they were men of their times. And a lot of issues, a lot of things have happened in the world, a lot of philosophical viewpoints have developed they just were not prepared to deal with. You know, we have to recognize those limitations. And maybe to a certain extent, the post-anarchist writers are onto something. Also, you know, you mentioned the ways in which someone like Saul Newman criticizes classical anarchists, but there's an important way in which he agrees with them. For instance, in one idea that Newman has developed at length is on the autonomy of the state, not simply as a tool of class rule, but as a center of power in itself. And he's gone and developed that idea in some interesting ways. So there's a continuity there between the post-anarchist and the classical anarchist. You know, that could be explored as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. You know, this was largely sort of a critique, trying to pull out some of the places I think that they're stating the critique of a critique. This was, I guess, in some ways. But yeah, as I was saying at the beginning, I'm, you know, totally supportive of the project of trying to find those affinities. And to expand and, you know, add more complexity to some of the ideas of anarchists, and some of the places where I think that there are, you know, holes or gaps or inconsistencies, or, you know, we're in a new historical moment, a conjuncture that needs new theories, new ideas. But yeah, I mean, I think that idea, the critique of Marxism that anarchists have, that, you know, they talk about political autonomous. I don't think an idea new to Newman, you know, something he's pulling out of Bakunin and Kropotkin, but something he definitely elaborates more. I think that's a place that we can do a lot more.
I think something really important to remember is that the state isn't the only institution that oppresses us and constructs us or makes subjects of us. There's also schools, hospitals, prisons, police, and these are also taking apart academic power is everywhere. It doesn't just emanate from the state, and I don't necessarily think we're better off I think it should be a bit more nuanced, a bit more tactical kind of approaches to transforming what exists into something better,
as opposed to just destroying it altogether. But I
change my mind
on
this all the time, so I'm just like
quoting
minds. I think we should just all die.
Does anyone have a question for that?
From Egypt, I guess. Different something you envision to the state.
When Antiochus came out, the Lusingatar made this notorious comment that the ideal readers were really smart high school kids. And if you ever tried to read Antiochus, you realize how what a difficult book it is to get through, and how, like Alan was saying, very playful, maybe a little bit too playful, and I think they may have even taken some of that back in later years, like I Antiochus came up and changed some of their positions from the time of Antiochus. In a way, I think the brief lexicon of philosophical exponent of Americanism, Folsom, which hopefully will be published soon in English, because it's already actually been translated for some time. I think it fits that description a bit better. Like, really, an intelligent 14-year-old could pick that up and really get something out of it and be trained on post-structuralism. So, yeah.
Okay, I think that's... okay, one more. Just actually tying together a couple of things that came up. There was a question here about practical versus philosophical sides of, you know, working for revolution or change or whatever. There was also talk about sort of critiques of novelty and playfulness and individualistic kind of forms of rebellion or resistance. I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that any moment, small or big, is kind of this interaction of sort of organic and big structural. There's this exchange of ideas. There are structural big things, the state, there's social tyranny, there are these things bearing down on us, but there are also kind of things happening within us and between us in this organic way, and sort of understanding that interplay. It often is, in our world, a very imbalanced thing in a Goliath looming over David sort of way, but we can work to recognize the organic things and how they can, that actor field, whatever thing that you touched on, the way that ideas can spread sort of organically, and sort of realizing that these things are all happening at the same time, and sort of work to conduct them in a more positive direction. Yes.
Thanks for bearing with me.